humans inhabit most of the globe, but there are still many places on the planet that remain unknown to science. In one remote part of New Guinea, a team of scientists is trying to change that. And a recent expedition by that group, Conservation International, has led to the identification of dozens of new species. We're joined now by Dr. Bruce Beeler, an ornithologist and senior research scientist with the group, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hi.
Well, thanks very much. Great to be back.
What part of New Guinea did you and your team go to?
This is the western half of New Guinea, which belongs to Indonesia. It's the easternmost province of Indonesia. It's called Papua, not to be confused with the eastern side of New Guinea, which is called Papua New Guinea. This part of the geography of the world is one of the more confusing, without question.
And how remote is that area you visited?
There are very few places on Earth that would be considered more remote than this. And it's both physically remote and politically remote. So I say physically remote, it takes about probably from New York City, 6 or 7 plane flights to get there, then a helicopter. In terms of political remoteness, you need all sorts of paperwork to get permission to go there and do scientific research. So not an easy process.
And why is that? Doesn't the Indonesian government want scientists to go in there and do research?
Well, you know, think about if you had wanted groups of Indonesian scientists come to be doing work in Yellowstone National Park or Yosemite. It's just a complicated process having foreigners come into your country beating around the bushes. So you got to give them credit for, you know, wanting to make sure everything's on the up and up.
What is it about the Foja Mountains in New Guinea that makes it so ecologically diverse? I mean, I imagine that if you went to the Adirondacks, you wouldn't find dozens of new species.
Well, exactly. The Foja Mountains, you can call them Foja or Foja. We all call them different things.
F-O-J-A.
F-O-J-A. They look a lot like the Adirondacks. They're very green. They're hilly. They go to around, Adirondacks go to around 5,000 feet. These go to around 7. So they're not terribly high. Unlike the Adirondacks, they don't get snow in the winter because they're right on the equator. And it's also very humid like the Adirondacks, but instead of snow in the winter, they have a perpetual spring year-round. They're just a little bit south of the equator. And it's basically an isolated island of upland habitat. So you've got on the tops of these hills, on the tops of these mountains, you have patches of upland habitat, which are misty and green and mossy and very beautiful and verdant and an ideal place for species to evolve.
Is this kind of like what we see in Madagascar or in the Galapagos?
Yep. Absolutely. Well, I'd say Madagascar would be the closest comparison, Madagascar or in the Andes of Ecuador, where you have an isolated mountain range that's separated from the nearest other mountain ranges by lowland jungle. Now, you'd think the green forest on top of the mountain would be much like the jungle at the bottom, but they're very different. Different trees, different wildlife, different temperatures, different biotic conditions. So they, you know, you get this sort of isolation.
And what kinds of animals did you discover there? Were they mammals or are we talking insects mostly?
Really the whole gamut. Of course, you're always going to find more insects than anything else. So for every one or two mammals we find, we'll probably get a half a dozen or a dozen new species of insects because there are just so many darn insects out there, and they've evolved so rapidly. We got, I think, four new species of mammals, a new species of bird, an imperial pigeon, which was a big surprise, a new gecko, a new frog, a number of plants, and as well about a dozen or so new species of insects.
I'm assuming they're all similar in many ways to species we already know.
In most cases, they are, right. And that's, of course, that's how these things work. One thing evolves from the other.
Do we know how recently these species have branched off the evolutionary tree?
So it seems, yeah, because this Foja mountain range is very, very young indeed. If you, I've gone to geologists to find out exactly what's the history of this range, and they've basically been dug up out of the bottom of the Pacific Ocean as the Australian plate, of which New Guinea's part, has been sort of pushing inexorably forward, northward, up into the Pacific. It's dug up this seafloor bed and created these new mountain ranges, which we call the North Coastal Range. So these ranges are in some cases only 1 or 2 million years old, and the highland areas that where these new plants and animals exist are even younger than that. So we're talking about very new, young species.
Can you spot them as new species, or do they, for example, the four new mammals, I don't know what kinds of mammals they were, but would you say, gee, I've never seen anything like that before, or does it, is it more likely,
I think in every case, what you say is a variant on a mole. You see, they're very, in some cases, very similar. They're usually slightly browner, slightly darker, slightly lighter, slightly different colored, different size. Basically, what you see is these incremental changes, maybe a different eye color. So, with for instance, we found a new wallaby. That's the smallest wallaby ever discovered. A wallaby's, of course, in the kangaroo family. So it's essentially a cat-sized wallaby, a little tiny thing that goes around in the bottom of the forest floor.
You also found
a
tree mouse.
So that was smaller than any other wallaby we knew.
And you also found a tree mouse?
A little tree mouse, again, just like the name says. It creeps around on branches and the trunks of trees, lives up in the canopy. A tiny little thing, similar to another tree mouse that lives on the main range, the sort of Andean-like big mountain range to the south in New Guinea.
You also found a new pigeon. Would it be very different than the kind of pigeons we know here in New York City?
Quite different from the one in New York City. About the same size, maybe about a third larger, but quite a bit more colorful. Green with a russet breast and a belly and a gray cap and a white throat and a red eye. Quite colorful and sort of match goes in well with the rainforest. And just a beautiful thing and a huge surprise for us. We weren't expecting to find any new birds on this trip because the birds have been so well studied.
By the way, we have pictures of a few of the animals that your expedition discovered posted on our website at WNYC.org. I'm talking with Bruce Beeler about some of the new species that were discovered in an expedition to New Guinea recently. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. How long did the expedition last?
It was a little longer than a month, and that's a typical Conservation International rapid assessment. We've been doing this, I think we've been now to about 65 different places around the world, some cases to rainforests, in some cases to coral reefs, in some cases to important aquatic resources, important river basins. Essentially, going out and visiting these places for the first time and telling the world what lives in these unusual corners of the earth.
Well, humans, I assume, do not live there.
In some of these, in the Foya Mountains, the people, they're landowners. They live in villages around the verges of the mountain range at the bottom, and they basically go into the verges of the foothills, and they're in there looking. They're hunting for wild game. They're collecting things. These people are subsistence farmer forest people. So they're in the forest, getting what they can out of it, medicinals, all sorts of things.
Does that mean that some of these species might be threatened with extinction, being hunted?
No, because the area where we found all these new species is up high, an area only accessible by helicopter. It'd probably be 10 to 15 days' walk from the nearest village. So the local people are penetrating just the very, very verge at the very bottom of this range. So in essence, this area, which is about 500,000 acres, quite a large area, entirely protected naturally. It's also protected politically as well because the Indonesian government has declared it a national wildlife sanctuary.
How do you discover?
We can be thankful for that.
How do you discover a new species? Do you set traps? Do you set up some kind of a viewing station?
Depending on whether you're looking for a plant or animal or what kind of animal, it's everybody uses a different method. In terms of birds, I'm a bird man. You go out in the forest and essentially listen, and you're listening for new sounds. I've worked in New Guinea for about 35 years, and I've built up a knowledge of the different bird songs that you would hear in the forest. So you hear something strange, and you try to track it down and get a look at it. If you see it's something new, then you try to catch it in a net if you can put up a bird net and capture it that way. And you can photograph it. You can document all the details.
Are there still new ones to be discovered?
Absolutely. We've been there 3 times to this one mountain range, and each time we go, we find new things. And I think that's one of the main take-home points is that some of these forests are so rich and so difficult to penetrate that it takes multiple visits. And it's going to be decades before we really understand some of these most special places on Earth. So we shouldn't, your listeners out there shouldn't think that the world is fully known and that we've done all the work we need to do. So I envision, you know, generations to come, people still beating out on trails in forests like this, looking for new species.
Just one more thing. Does the person who discovers a new animal get to decide what to name it?
That's right. So, for instance, that new imperial pigeon, it was Neville Kemp, a young English ornithologist who discovered that. He'll be naming that, and he will have that pleasure, which is really quite a fun pleasure to have.
A reminder that there's a slideshow of some of the discoveries that the expedition made on our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Dr. Bruce Beeler, an ornithologist and senior research scientist with Conservation International, for talking with us today.
That's great talking to you. Thanks so much.